1956, okay. And he died, of course, November the 21st, 1927. That's when he fell in Dwight Cotton Mill, yeah, and broke his neck.
And that's on your dad's side, right?
That's on my dad's.
Did you not know the ones on your mother's side? Or?
Well, yes, I know Paul. Just Paul, and yeah. He married again. His wife died at 33 years, yeah, old, and my grandpa here, Grandpa Carroll, his wife died at around 33, 34 years old, mm-hmm, and he was left with children, you know, to, yeah, raise, and my Aunt Sally, she helped raise the children, and, you know, while they were little, she took care of them and cooked and helped Paul a lot and took care of them,
mm-hmm,
and Grandpa Carroll, the way I can remember him most was, he was always picking at me and playing with me, yeah, and he'd say, "Now, what's your name?" I'd say, "Gladys Ima Jean." Mm-hmm. He'd say, "Gladys Tommy Jean," and I'd fuss with him, yeah, because I didn't like for him to call me Gladys Tommy Jean, mm-hmm, but that's the way he always did, and that's how I can remember him.
Yeah.
And his first wife was Ellen Kaufman Carroll.
Uh-huh.
They had 5 children. They had 3 girls and 2 boys.
Oh, okay.
My daddy was John W. Carroll. And then he had a brother named Luther, sister Sally, Mary, and Liddy.
Mm-hmm.
They all are dead. Aunt Sally and Uncle Sidney were just like grandpa parents to us. They never had any children, and that was the only place that my daddy would let us stay,
yeah,
because we could go and spend the night with them, but that's the only time that we could spend the night with anybody.
Okay. Now going on to your later life,
I went to work at McNair Drug, mm-hmm, in Alabama City, Dwight Square.
And what were you there?
I was a clerk.
Yeah. And then where else did you work?
And worked at, well, from there, Ed Anderson was working there. Mm-hmm. And later, Ed and Don McNair they bought Eden Drug, mm-hmm, on First Avenue in Gadsden.
Yeah.
And later, I worked over there. But the way I got my job at McNair Drug, my sister, younger sister, was working at McNair's, mm-hmm, and going to school. She worked in the afternoons. And so I told her that I'd like to go to work, you know. And so she talked to Mr. McNair about me going to work, mm-hmm, up there. And he told her, he said, "Well, just tell her to come up here and see me." So I went up there. So Mr. McNair wasn't even there, but the, mm-hmm, druggist was, but I can't remember his name. But he said, "I'll just get you an apron, put it on, so go to work," because they had a fountain, you know.
Yeah.
They had the fountain. We worked behind the fountain. We waited on people for cosmetics. We waited on people back at the window for drugs. You know, they put the prescriptions up in the window, and we'd take them and take their money, mm-hmm, and do everything. And we even had curb service, you know. The cars, yeah, would drive up and blow. You'd go out and take their orders and come back and fill their orders, mm-hmm, and take it out to the car.
Now, how old were you?
Oh, I was 20... I was about 26, I guess,
yeah,
25, somewhere along there. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed working there.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun, and we worked hard, though,
yeah,
because we worked. I'd go to work like 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'd work one night till 7 till 10, and then the next day I'd go in maybe at 10 and work till 6.
Yeah. How much were you making on that job?
Oh, I think I started at about $19 a week.
Okay.
And later it went up to $35, mm-hmm, a week, but that was, you know,
yeah,
later on. And because I worked for, you know, you just worked for nothing at stores then.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get no minimum wage or nothing like that. We just, and if you enjoyed it, you enjoyed,
yeah,
working, and we did. And I remember one time I went out. I was taking a big tray out full of milkshakes and sundaes and stuff to put on a car. And as I went out the door, there was a boy come around the corner of the drugstore on a bicycle, run into me,
mm-hmm,
knocked me down. All that stuff just went everywhere.
Yeah.
But it didn't hurt me bad. I just, you know, I got up and, of course, we had to clean up the mess, and then I had to go back and do all that again and fix those people's order again.
Yeah.
But that's one thing I can remember.
So you were 26 then, so
about 26.
What year was that?
Oh, gosh, that was 41, about 46.
So, okay. And then?
Well, I went to Edens from there and worked at Edens, and I really enjoy working over
there
too. They had fountain over there.
Okay.
But listen, at McNair's though, they had the wagons, you know, that they carried through the cotton mill in the back. You know, they fixed the meals or sandwiches and things. They carried it through the cotton mill for the boys, for the men up there to buy what they wanted. And, of course, we, you know, anything that we could do, we helped to board that. And they made ice cream. They made their own ice cream at McNair's. Mm-hmm. They had the best ice cream in Gadsden.
Now, did anybody from your family work at the cotton mill?
Yeah, my Uncle Sidney worked at the cotton mill, and my Aunt Miriam worked in the cotton mill, and I believe that's the only two I can remember right now that worked in the mill. Now, I think their children, their children worked, like Ben Sutherland and David Sutherland, they all worked in the mill. You know, just the families. They just, when the kids got old enough, they went to work and worked in the mill because it took everybody working to make ends meet.
Now, that mill owned the houses behind it, too, didn't it?
Yeah, all that was.
You had to live in those houses.
Cotton Mill Village, that was what that was.
Yeah.
But, of course, now, since the cotton mill's gone, they've sold all, you know, the people bought those houses and tore
the. The steel plant was like that, too. They owned the houses.
Yeah, they sure did. They owned the houses, and you could rent them, you know, pretty reasonable.
Yeah. Did the steel plant have a store that you could shop for?
Commissaire. Commissaire.
Yeah, so you had to shop there and buy stuff from the company?
Yeah. We bought, material and stuff up at the commissary, and they sold meat and stuff, you know.
Was
they
it
had
good prices, or did they charge too much?
Well, I think it was pretty good prices, you know, that they had then. And we just, you know, we traded there, and most everybody did.
Yeah.
Because you had to trade on the credit where you could get what you needed and you could pay for it the next payday, say.
Yeah. Well, then, so you were working at Eden Drug, and then how long did you work there?
Eden's? Oh, gosh, I worked off and on for, I don't know, 8 or 10 years, I guess, just off and on at the drugstore, you know.
Mm-hmm. Then you worked at Alico.
Yeah, I worked at Alico in 83. Yeah.
So you were that. When were you the inspector at the factory?
Over at Brad's. That was in 67, 68, and 69.
And you said it was an assembly line type job.
Yeah. We just inspected the parts before the.
Okay. What were they making?
It was they put these was designator. Cap things that they put the designators and things in to, you know, for the army
for them to use.
Service. Yes.
So you just looked at them as they went by.
Yeah, I looked at them and see if there's anything wrong with them, see if there's any thing reason that I should lay that one out and not let it go by.
Okay. Okay. And when you were working at
he always came over to the fire station over. Across the street, there was a fire station, and he came over there and played bridge with the firemen. And one day, he came over with the firemen, and one of the firemen introduced him to me.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, well, he came back and he asked me to. No, we met down at the little cafe next to the Ritz Theater. I went down there a lot and eat at this little place, and Roy came in there. And he sat down by me, and I was meeting my girlfriend there. We was having supper, and he told us, he said, "Hey, y'all go to the show right now, I'll pay you way." And we said, "Okay."
Yeah.
So we went to the show, so he carried me home that night. We, of course, we walked.
Yeah.
It's the only way we had to go was walk.
So you still didn't have a car? What year was this?
This was in 47.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked me home, then he went on home, and then we started... from then on, we started dating, and we dated for a year, and then he gave me an engagement ring.
Yeah.
And we were engaged for a year, and in July 1949, we were married, July the 2nd, and we were married, and then 1951, our first child was born, and she was a girl.
That was mother.
Diane, that was your mother. And then 1953, we had another child, and it was Roy Dean.
Mm-hmm.
And then we thought that was our family because the doctor said that they didn't want me to have any more children. Yeah. So we done real good, but in 1959, we had another son born to us, and he was Gary Dale. And, of course, we wouldn't take $1 million for any of them because we love them so much. But they, at this time, then, they did really stop me from having children. Yeah. They said there's no way that I could have any more. And so we were happily married. We, Papa,
where did he work?
He worked at the steel plant. Okay. He worked at Republic. And we had a good married life. Yeah. And
so you never
family.
Had much money, but you had enough.
We had plenty of money to get. We had, you know, we had money to get by. We owned our home, and had money to buy clothes.
When did you get your first car? You said you didn't have one.
Lord, let's see.
You don't remember?
Well, about I guess it was 2 years or three after we married.
So about what, 52?
Yeah, somewhere along there. We got a car because Daddy was walking, or either he'd have to catch the bus and go to work. And he got a little old car that he could go backwards and forwards to work in. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I couldn't drive. I never did learn to drive then. But in 1955, I did learn to drive. Yeah. So I've been driving ever since. And,
well, when you were little, did you have
We had a radio.
You had a radio?
And we had a record player. You know, you played them big old records on.
So you listened to radio shows?
And Grand Ole Opry and things like that. Yeah. Oh, I loved it. And I really enjoyed it. Like when Daddy was, he slept in the room where this radio and the record player was.
Yeah.
And but when he'd get up in the afternoon when he was working 11 to 7, you know, and he'd sleep, well, that'd be my place to go. I'd go in there and sit by that radio and listen to that radio and, you know, sing and just have a good time by myself because I enjoyed the music and I really enjoyed it.
So when was that? That was in the 20s or?
No,
that was 30s.
Oh, that was, that was in the 30s.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that was in the early, you know.
When did you have a TV?
Oh, we didn't have a TV till 1953.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
So you didn't get a TV till after you were married?
No. Now, Mom and Daddy got one. They got one right after me and Roy married. Mother and Daddy got a TV. And we, you know, and we could go over and see theirs a little bit, not much, because we didn't have that much time.
Was it black and white?
Oh, yeah, black and white. So we got one in 53. We got it for Roy for Father's Day. And we thought we had to stay up till that TV signed off, you know, at night. And we did for a long time, and Roy'd work in days, you know, and it was hard. So finally he decided that was about as, he couldn't stay up every night and see TV, that we'd have to go to bed early, so we did. We'd go to bed early. But during the day, my sister had married and lived next door to me, Irene, we'd get up early and get our house cleaned up and get through where we could sit down and see the programs, you know, that came on that we wanted to see during the day, you know, about come on maybe 9:30. And we'd get up, we'd get up and get through, and she'd come out and we'd sit and watch TV.
Yes. So you said most people just walked around still.
Yeah.
Around here.
Yeah.
Not many people had cars then?
Well, then there was more had cars
then.
Yeah, there was a lot more had cars then. But
what about
just
bicycles or anything else? Anybody?
Well, some people had bicycles and rode the bicycles a little bit, but we didn't. Roy didn't ride no bicycle.
Yeah. How long did Papa live?
He lived in 1989. Daddy got sick.
Yeah,
and carried him to the doctor. And they checked him, and they told me to get him to the hospital as quick as I could get him there, that he had lost a lot of blood. Mm-hmm. And so I got him to the hospital. That was on a Monday, and they started running tests and found out that he had colon cancer.
Yeah, that's when they found he had cancer.
Uh-huh, that's when they found out he had cancer. And so on the Friday of that week, I believe it was Thursday or Friday, well, they operated on him. And they found out it was in his liver, too.
Brain,
it was just spots all over his liver. It wasn't just in one place. It was all over his liver. So there wasn't anything they could do about the spots in his liver because they couldn't take his whole liver out. So he was real bad there for a while, and when they let us bring him home, by the time we got home, there was a nurse here because he was that bad, and that he needed somebody here with him and needed the nurse to check him out. But within 2 weeks, he was getting better, and he was feeling a lot better, and that the nurse, she began to drop off and didn't come but about three times a week, you know. They just dropped down to finally, he just got to where he was able to be up, and and of course he had a Groshon catheter they'd put in him when they operated on him to give him chemotherapy. And after he got able, well, we had we'd go to the doctor's office and we'd get seven tubes of the chemotherapy, where I could put one on every evening around 4:30 when it run out. Well, I was to put another on, and we'd go back then in 7 days, get seven more. And this went on for about 6-8 months that we give him this chemo. And then finally they run another CAT scan, and it was kind of in remission. So they stopped the chemo. And he didn't have to take any for a while. And I think it was about seven or eight months that he didn't take any. And they took the Groshon cath we had it took out. Had to go back to the hospital and be put to sleep and take that out. And then we went back for another CAT scan. They wanted us to have another CAT scan made. And when we did, they said that he needed to start taking the chemo again, but they just give it to him in his hand, you know, just a needle. And to give it to him in his hand, we went to once a week, I think it was, and they give him that in his hand.
Okay, and when did he die?
He died in 1991.
So how long did he live with the cancer?
A couple of years. Yeah, a couple of years he lived with the cancer.
Okay. Well, let's go back to that. Your job
was out of coat.
Okay, how long, when did you retire? How old were you?
I was 65 when I retired.
Okay.
So 66.
What year was that?
No, wait a minute. No, I wasn't hardly that old. Because, let's see, in 62, when I was 62, I just went to work in part time. And then I worked till, let's see, that was in about 84. No, 84 is when I retired, because Mother came to live with me, and I quit, and Mother came to live with me.
And when did she die? That was 88.
88. She lived with me 4 years, and I took care of her and run out.
This was Dan Lockridge interviewing Gladys Pruitt at her home in Gadsden, Alabama, on March 27th, 1996. The subject of the interview was the Great Depression in the 1930s.